Welcome back to the Paula Gordon Show. Frank Soloway is our guest. Bill Russell is here, and we are talking about families. We are talking specifically about how birth order, that is to say, where you are born within a family, and we all are, how it affects personality and creativity. You apply science to 20 years of looking at, maybe longer, at how this happens. And we've only just begun to talk about the science part of how you... And Bill's making faces at me, so Bill gets to ask some,
too. One more minor digression. And it would seem that the obligation to test, to apply the scientific methodology, makes you much more cautious of the hypotheses you form. If I don't have the obligation to test it, it's easy to just toss off hypotheses and write books about it and have all sorts of opinions. But once you add in the obligation, the scientific obligation to test it and know that you've got to do that, I would think you would spend a great deal more time and be very cautious in formulating those hypotheses.
Testing is very time consuming, and indeed, because it is, people need to be very careful about how they spend their time. In addition, it is, if you get into the habit of testing your ideas, you also tend to think very carefully about what the idea is. The very act of operationalizing something in terms of numbers is to spell out in infinite detail what exactly you mean by, say, conforming to authority or being conscientious. You can't just have a vague outcome measure. You have to really define that very clearly. And finally, when you get into the whole process of testing, you have to be a little more respectful of alternative hypotheses. There are some outcomes that actually confirm more than one hypothesis in life, and you haven't really done the definitive test if you haven't found a way to distinguish between two or three different possible alternative explanations. So the business of testing can be quite tedious and time-consuming. It took me 26 years to do the research for Born
Bill. But other than that...
a short jaunt through history. And actually, it wasn't obtaining information on birth order that took me 26 years. I could have generated a book on birth order in a couple of years. What took me so much time was testing all the alternative explanations for radical behavior and radical thinking.
Things like?
What's the impact of social class?
Are
lower class people more revolutionary than upper? Are younger people
more
revolutionary?
Which would be a Marxist argument, for instance, or a Freudian argument.
Right. What about Oedipal conflict with a parent? Is that a better predictor than birth order?
You've really thought about these things.
I actually made an effort to cull from the literature in history and the history of science every plausible explanation that I could find of why anybody accepted a new idea and someone else rejected it. So I looked at patterns of friendship, are you Protestant, Catholic, more than 200 different possible variables. And that's what took so long, not testing whether birth order is important. Yes, it is. Is it more important than anything else we'd like to know about? And the answer to that is it's the single best predictor of attitudes toward innovation that I've been able to find.
Toward innovation?
Toward new ideas, toward changing your mind about anything, toward intellectual flexibility. Birth order is a great predictor of not what you think, but whether you can alter your views about what you think.
Is it important to be able to alter one's views about what you think?
It is terribly important in fields like science. Might actually be maladaptive in other areas, like religion. All depends what your profession is. But in the world of science, we like to pride ourselves that we are capable of abandoning an erroneous viewpoint and adopting a new one. And that's what revolutions are
all about. And we maintain that science is sort of our underlying metaphor in the current era.
One of the tests of a good theory or hypothesis is that it be falsifiable.
Falsifiable, what is that?
Which is to say that you can't make a sweeping generalization that you can essentially defend no matter what. And it would seem that what I'm hearing you say is that you have spent basically that 20-plus years trying to falsify or find ways that your hypothesis could be falsified, that's part of the obligation you felt to before you were willing to put this hypothesis out as a good representation of the role of birth order. Is that?
Yes, I was very concerned to let all the rivals have their say. It might turn out that birth order was a moderately good predictor. But after all, if it's 15th on a list of 15 predictors, why start there? Why not
look for number one?
Yeah, after all, if say social attitudes are a much better predictor of, in other words, if liberals are more open to innovations than conservatives, well, why waste our time in the trenches with something like birth order when we have this much better predictor? And in that sense, we wouldn't be falsifying the role of birth order, but we'd be demoting it into its proper place. So I was very concerned to be able to rank order all of the predictors. And the big surprise, in fact, it's never ceased to continue to surprise me, is the discovery that the kinds of variables like birth order, age gaps between siblings, gender, and conflict with parents, the kinds of variables that predict why one sibling is different from another, are the best class of predictors for telling us why an individual will accept or reject a revolution. In other words, revolutions, in a sense, begin and end within the family. Individual differences among siblings are the bulk of the story. They're not the entire story, but they tell you more than anything else tells you.
You're talking revolutions like the Copernican Revolution, when we changed how we looked at the universe. Revolutions like Darwin, even Einstein.
The Protestant Reformation, the French Revolution, political, social, cultural, scientific, all of those.
The whole shebang. Politics, science, religion, and social thought. I looked at 121 different revolutions in my study. The study has 6,500 people in it. And birth order, along with other aspects of sibling differences, represents the single best predictor of why somebody
supports. In some senses, this is counter.
Quite remarkable, isn't it?
This is counterintuitive.
Surprised me. I would never have bet that a sibling difference would have been in first place. I would have expected between family differences to be more important. I would have expected you, if you come from a highly religious family as opposed to a very liberal family, that would be a much better predictor. It's a good predictor.
Intuitively, you would have thought that.
It's a good predictor. There's no question that people who are religiously liberal were much more open to Darwin's ideas than people who were religiously conservative. But the surprise is that it is not the best predictor. Mm-hmm. Age is an awfully good predictor. Young people are more open-minded than older people. But birth order still is a better predictor.
Yeah, there was a specific thing that stuck in my head. Whoops. Your turn.
There are always stories told, particularly about during civil wars, but also in the kinds of conflicts that you described, the revolutions. The stories have to do with the falling out between siblings as if it is a tragedy, unexpected, and really sort of violates the natural order. And what you're saying is, it is the natural order.
Yes, it's these sibling conflicts in radical revolutions are generally portrayed as flukes or as cases of excess. The big surprise is that they are the rule. I looked at the voting patterns during the Reign of Terror in the French Revolution, and birth order is the single best predictor of voting. But we know that in two interesting ways. One is that birth order does predict the voting. The firstborns in the convention were much more tough-minded, more likely to vote to execute the king, more likely to support the terror. But we also had 16 brothers, eight pairs of brothers, who were simultaneously elected to the convention. And they were at loggerheads in exactly the same way that all the other deputies were at loggerheads. The firstborns were inclined to support aggression and terror, and the laterborns were much more mild-mannered and concerned about the excesses of the revolution. That's exactly the prediction we would make based on birth order. So the surprising case, sibling strife in revolutions, is the rule. It's a universal phenomenon. And the reason it's the rule is because most of personality differences are, in fact, evolved within the family and represent strategies for dealing with our closest rivals. And so we are wired, essentially, to have personality run its course in childhood in such a way that we are adapted to deal with another sibling. We're not wired to have our personality develop so that we're adapted to deal with somebody who's in another social class, because we don't compete with them in childhood mm-hmm. for parental investment. It's our siblings and the threat they present to getting out of childhood alive that are at the heart of the story of personality development.
We're going to be back in just a minute, and I want to sort of set the predicate of where we come back. You're not necessarily saying that this is a deterministic system you're talking about, and I'll bet you as you shake your head that we'll talk about that when we'll be right back. We are at MIT in Cambridge, Massachusetts with Frank Soloway, Bill Russell's here. I'm Paula Gordon, and we invite you to stay with us.